As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
So hi everyone, thank you so much for being here. I'm Elisabetta Dominico, I'm a researcher specializing in dystopia, and I also teach comic history at Ulm University of Milan. So today we will talk about the representation of women in comic history, and we'll try to reflect on why representation matters. So, the depiction of women in comics is a complicated issue because female characters' representation is not univocal and fixed, neither temporally nor geographically, neither physically nor conceptually. So women can be as strong, as indomitable, as ever sexualized. They can be relegated into domesticity, dreaming of a perfect married life, or they can occupy a position of power. Women can be damsel in distress, sidekicks, superheroines, girlfriends, wives, lovers, and villains. They can be what they want or what men wanted them to be. Or they can be in the middle, fighting to find their place and their voice in their stories. Women represent just the 15-25% of comic characters, according to several studies. And in the world of superheroes, one of the most prominent comic subgenre, superheroines are more often given non-physical, thoughts-induced abilities, such as intellect, telepathy, precognition, and emotional control. While male superheroes tend to possess physical powers as strength, stamina, invulnerability, female superheroes have more light capacities, such as agility or flight. even gendered code name show sexist tendencies. While 30% of superheroes have the word man in their name, only 5.1% boy, 12% of superheroines are called with the minimizing term girl, and just 5.7% of them are women. Anyway, in this small percentage, there are not only supporting stereotype and objectified characters, but many superheroine and female figures that are perfectly able to compete in strength, courage, intelligence, and determination with their male counterparts. And at the same time, it is also undeniable that comic relies on defined by overemphasized violence, superomism, and hypermasculinity that unavoidably influence and damage the construction of women's identity, images, and role in the society. No? Cooperate? Okay. So in fiction, and sadly in daily life, women can be subjected to several kinds of violence. If psychophysical abuses, rapes, and femicide are the most blatant, tangible, and dangerous example, there are many other common and only apparently less striking methods and tendencies that support misogynist and patriarchal systems, such as sexist language, humor, sexual objectification, aesthetic prejudice, conservative moral order, control, humiliation, depreciation, domestication, and bias. So, from this perspective, the linguistic, cultural, sexual, and physical representation of women in comics can help us to recognize and to reflect on the prejudice, the rhetoric, and the action promoting marginalization and abuse against women in real life. Let's start this talk with one of the most impressive, iconic feminist icon of popular culture, Wonder Woman. A mighty Amazon, daughter of Queen Hippolyta, Diana was created by psychologist William Moulton Marston and artist R.G. Peters in the 40s. In a time where many women's rights were still to be recognized, Marston imagined a strong, independent, resourceful, and educated female superheroes communicating to American society new gender roles and also attacking patriarchal themes and systems. According to Marston, Diana is a psychological propaganda for the new type of woman who should rule the world. So, promoting gender equality in real life while fighting villains in fictional worlds, Wonder Woman was and still is a concrete socio-political medium for emancipation. As Jill Lepore suggested, Wonder Woman was a product of the suffragist, feminist, and birth control movement of the first decades of the 20th century, and became also a source for the women's liberation movement of the 60s and the 70s. She supports justice and rights, and paraphrasing Simone de Beauvoir, reject the idea that women are simply sexual and submissive objects and inessential others compared to the subject and the absolute represented by men. So, despite controversial details such as the bondage cliché and the hypersexualization and the occasional depowering of her body, Diana is a princess that doesn't need to be saved. On the contrary, she often saves her lover, Army Officer Steve Trevor, and many women from dangerous and general sexist incidents or menaces, trying to empower women to look after themselves and to discover their own physical, socio-political, and economic strength. The fate of most women in comics was dependent upon the male heroes, not only to rescue them, but to give them a sense of purpose. So they were powerless without a man. Wonder Woman instead shows readers that women are not simply men's commodity or subordinates. They are naturally strong. They can oppose violence, submission, and prejudice and demand socio-political, economic, and cultural equality. Diana's wonderful abilities are divine, but the superheroine teaches us that every woman possesses indomitable powers. According to Gloria Steinem, Wonder Woman's lesson is that each of us may have a known power within us, if we only believe and practice them. Diana is not alone. She's one of the many powerful women in comics world, such as Marla Drake, Mary Batson, Kara Zor-El, Barbara Gordon, Jean Grey, Natasha Romanoff, Carol Danvers, and many, many more. First appeared in 1941, Sunday newspaper comic strip character Miss Fury, alter ego of Marla Drake, fearlessly opposes criminals, including mad scientist Diman Saraf and evil Nazis as Erika von Kampf. She's a single mother of an adopted son. She has a love interest, but her mission comes always first. Miss Fury is a crucial character for the story of female superheroes because she's one of the first female fighters of the Nine Arts and also the first superheroine created, written, and drawn by a woman, cartoonist June Tarpe Mills, who published her work under a sexual ambiguous name, Tarpe, to suggest that the author was a man. Appeared for the first time in Captain Marvel Adventures number 18 in 1942, Mary Batson, aka Mary Marvel, is the twin sister of Billy Batson, aka Shazam or Captain Marvel, and one of the first female counterparts of a tremendously popular superhero. She derives her powers from a set of female benefactors that give her a lot of powers that, as we were talking before, a little bit feminine. So Celine gives her grace, Hippolyta strength, Ariadne and then Artemis skill, Zephyrus fleetness, Aurora and then Aphrodite beauty, and Minerva wisdom. Kara Zor-El, aka Supergirl, is a Kryptonian and invulnerable superheroine that first appeared in Superman 123 in 1958, and that can compete in power and skill with her cousin, the Man of Steel himself. First appeared in X-Men number 1 in 1963, Jean Grey, the first woman in the X-Men team, possesses outstanding telekinetic and telepathic powers, and she's one of the strongest mutants in the world. Former Russian spy and later SHIELD agent and member of the Avengers, Black Widow, alter ego of Natasha Romanoff, is biotechnologically enhanced and extremely intelligent. First appeared in Tale of Suspense 52 in 1964, she's an expert martial artist and tactician, cold-blooded and lethal. Another popular and iconic superheroine is Batgirl, and her most renewed alter ego is Barbara Gordon, who held this role from 1967 to 1988 and was back to it from 2011. A brilliant librarian with a PhD without super strength, Batgirl relying on her brain, martial arts training, and gadgetry to fight crime. Barbara perfectly embodies empowerment and feminist values, and she was ranked 17 in the top 100 comic book heroes of the ANG chart. Officer in the USA Army Force, Carol Danvers, who made her first appearance in Marvel Superheroes number 13 in 1968, as her most notable alter ego in Miss Marvel and Captain Marvel. She's one of the most powerful Avengers and possibly the strongest Marvel superheroine. She can fly, she has superhuman strength and speed, she can absorb and release energy, and she possesses a seventh sense, like a sort of precognition ability. Moreover, several female superheroes are extremely significant, not only for being powerful women, but also because they embrace racial, ethnic, and sexual otherness and points of view. X-Woman Aurora Monroe, aka Storm, who first appeared in Giant Size X-Men number 1 in 1975, is a Kenyan-American mutant able to control weather, and she is one of the first female and black leaders in comic history. She charismatically incarnates anti-patriarchal and anti-racist value at the same time. Shapeshifter Mystique, whose first appearance was in Miss Marvel number 16 in 1978, is a conflicted character, often represented as a mutant supervillain, who embodies queerness and gender fluidity. sexually free and aware, she can become a man, she's bisexual, and together with her love Destiny, raise another strong superheroine, Rogue. First appeared in Vengeance number 1 in 2011, America Chavez, aka Miss America, can fly and travel through multiverse and other reality as superhuman strength and speed, and she can project a devastating star blast. Moreover, she's also the first Latin American female and lesbian character to have her own series. Pakistani American Kamala Khan, who first appeared in Captain Marvel 14 in 2013, is the new Miss Marvel. As a smart and adventurous teenager, a geek, and a religion person, also if in her own way, Kamala can be considered a young but promising Muslim feminist. She respects her family and her family values and legacy, but Kamala is also eager to write her own path, supporting dialogue and inclusion between different realities and traditions. This short list shows extraordinary and resourceful female superheroes, incarnation of otherness and freedom that are normally resilient, independent, and emancipated. But even the strongest, the mightiest one, can be subjected to hypersexualization, commodification, disempowerment, and diminishment, reflecting masculine canons of beauty and serving male power interest. In the darkest background, women and superheroines have to face not only brutal enemies, but also limiting stereotypes, sexist oppression, and gender-based violence. In comics and in reality, abuse don't directly start from physical harassment, but originate from cultural and linguistical domination of masculine myth and from distorted, idealized, and sexualized representation of women's identity and bodies. Many comics display feminine clichés where women and superwomen occupy subordinate roles and predetermined spaces, performing stereotyped jobs and talking or worrying about love, beauty, and fashion. Almighty Wonder Woman, for example, joyfully accepts her position as the secretary of the Justice Society of America in All-Star Comics number 13 in 1942, while in the first year of the X-Men series, Jean Grey is often shown cooking, nursing, or sewing, despite being Xavier's most trusted and powerful pupil. While superheroes often avoid serious relationships, many superheroines and superheroes' love interests are almost obsessed by love and marriage. Owl Girl, Bullet Girl, Rocket Girl, Doll Girl, and many characters from the Golden Age of comics, 30s, 50s, even oppose crime and evil, not for sense of justice, but just to prove their love to their boyfriends. So sometimes female characters directly quarrel and fight to gain the affection of their beloved superheroes, as Lois Lane and Lana Lang do in order to attract Superman's attention and feelings, or even Wonder Woman and Batgirl when they try to win Batman's heart with embarrassing declaration, grand gesture, blatant competition, for example, as in The Brave and the Bold number 78 in 1955. During the Silver Age, until the late 60s, women didn't reach a real space for empowerment and autonomy in the comics narrative. It is sadly ironic, for example, that the only woman of the Fantastic Four, Sue Storm, possesses the power of invisibility. 4 years after the creation of the team in 1961, she was relegated to the role of the beautiful and nurturing subordinates with a preference for domestic works. In the Fantastic Four number 14 in 1963, for example, the group leader and Sue's future husband, Reed Richards, aka Mr. Fantastic, asked Sue to silently do the house cleaning, for which she had just volunteered. I know. While the other two, the Thing and Torch, just sleep nicely on the couch. During the Bronze Age of comics, things start to change, largely thanks to the protest of the 60s and the second wave of feminism. reflecting the socio-political changes of the time, during the 70s, minorities and women were substantially empowered in the comic world, as proved, for example, by the Chris Claremont new or renew female mutant character, such as, for example, just to quote really few names, Rogue, Kitty Pryde, Psylocke, Phoenix, Rachel Summers, and Mystique. These figures also expression of racial, cultural, sexual, and economic otherness smashed the limited and the stereotype portraits of women in comics and supported the diffusion of strong female characters that can face and bear any enemy and any task. During the Dark Age or modern age of comics, from late 80s to 20 years ago, more or less, there was a revival of the binary representation of gender with hypermuscular men and hypersexualized women. Violence was visually and conceptually exalted, and sex and sexuality were deeply spectacularized. Superwomen were both powerful and objectified, supported by new feminist wave and socio-political movements of the last two decades. We are witnessing an always more positive characterization, not only of women, but also of sexual, racial, ethnic, religious, and physical diversity, as the aforementioned character of Kamala Khan and America Chavez embody. And also a decrease in the underrepresentation, sexualization, and objectification of female characters. Nevertheless, decrease doesn't mean erase, and many disturbing issues still remain unsolved, such as the dominance of male and white protagonists and the latent erotization, debasement, and stereotyping of women. Despite being strong and bright superheroines that dynamically fight crime, women can still be depowered and demeaned by male and patronizing authority. So, the visual representation a woman's body is tendentially based on male fantasies and fears. Men are not generally depicted as sexual objects. It is true that most superheroes and villains are hypermuscular and dressed in close-fitting suits, but even the handsomest are rarely portrayed in explicit and eroticized ways or positions. Moreover, there are also many overweight, beastly, repulsive, gigantic, disfigured, and unpleasant male characters that do not reflect the classical aesthetic canon of beauty, proportion, and harmony, such as Kingpin, Hulk, The Thing, Hellboy, Beast, Nightcrawler, Deadpool, Doctor Doom, Penguin, Two-Face, Thanos, Colossus, and many more. Instead, women in comics, especially superheroines, are regularly depicted as beautiful, thin, tall, and busty figures with anatomically impossible proportions. There are, of course, relevant exceptions, including Aunt May, Cassandra Nova, Big Bertha, Fate, Atom Eve, Callisto, Dorothy Spinner, and Elastic Girl, but the general trend is to create idealized female figures that do not recognize and reflect woman diversity, and that propose unrealistic models of female physicality. Just stopping 1 second. Do you note some differences between the representation of Hulk and She-Hulk? Just a few? Come on. She is perfectly nice. She's green. She's a little bit stronger than another regular superheroine. But come on, she derives her power from Hulk blood because she received a transfusion at some point in the history. So why is she depicted like a supermodel and why he is depicted like a beast? Yeah. Yeah, because we want to, even villainesses, even we need to see sexy. Yeah. So let's go a little bit further. So The visual representation of women's body So the costumes of many superheroines leave almost nothing to imagination. They often wear leotards with deep necklines, very short skirt, tight pants, top that looks more like bra, and high heels. Emma Frost, white lingerie, Psylocke ninja bathing suit, Catwoman leather cat suit, and Power Girl costume with a big hole right on her chest are iconic and yet disturbing example of these tendencies. Besides revealing clothes, superwomen are also constantly represented in sensual and sexist points of view or poses. Describing their anomalous postures, Caroline Cocca uses the expression broke back pose. Women are frequently showed unnaturally twisted and arched to display all their curves in front and back simultaneously, like Wonder Woman over there. One back would have to be broken to contort in such way. So anatomy takes second place behind the necessity to eroticize the female figure for the pleasure of male gaze. Just to report one awful example, when gigantic mutant villain Blob eats size-shifting superheroine Wasp over here in Ultimate 2 in 2009, the body of the woman is shown from a strange angle that still emphasizes her breast. And to underline this deceptive representation of women, a satirical page called the Hawkeye Initiative was created in 2012, also thanks to the support and instruction of comic artists Noelle Stevenson and Blue. Its aim was to replace female characters in extremely contorted or sexy pose with fan art of the male superhero Hawkeye doing the same thing, usually with the same dress. So, again, can you see some difference between the two representations? Do you note something a little bit confusing? So it clearly appears that women are generally eroticized and we didn't notice them because we are, it's something normal for us. So they are eroticized even when it's not necessary. And narrative featuring women are obsessed with female shapes, stereotypes, and sexuality. Female characters can be abused and humiliated, but they usually still need to produce beauty, sensuality, and excitement. Despite the repression, female bodies are vehicle of erotic and social power. And this is the reason why superwomen, regardless of their wonderful ability, are still and often constructed as sexual fantasies. So shaping their bodies as sensual mirage makes the female character appear less threatening to patriarchy and manhood, and comfortingly useful also from an erotic point of view. The characterization of male figures, both good and evil, usually includes a hypermasculinity that exalts strength, control, power, and fantasy of submission and domination. Superheroes generally don't use brutal violence against women, but they are not immune to sexist language and behavior. Especially in the Golden and the Silver Age of comic, several superheroes diminish or even eat their female partners, and make joke about women's bad habit and inferiority. Superman, for example, generally use a paternalistic approach to Lois Lane, sometimes even employing arresting action. He erases Lois' memory with a kiss to cover up his super identity. He gives her superpower just to show how unbearable they are for a woman. And in Superman girlfriend Lois Lane number 14 in 1960, he punished Lois with a well-deserved spanking. In some exceptional cases, also superheroes can cross the line and commit reprehensible gender-based violence. In Avengers 2:13 in 1981, for example, Dr. Hank Pym under the identity of Yellow Jacket, ferociously slap his wife, Janet Van Dyne, aka the Wasp. Writer Mark Millar exaggerate Hank Pym's violent behavior in The Ultimate Six in 2002. Pym, during an argument, psychophysically abuses Jen and even tries to kill her shrunken wife in an horrific scene using bug spray and an army of ants, as you can see. She's under the table. And while the insects are ready to assault Jen, he says to his frightened wife, "You shouldn't have made me look small." So Jen's independence, her firmness maybe in the discussion, are interpreted by Pym as an attack against his masculinity, as an attempt to undermine his power and his control, generating an unstoppable desire of destruction, because, quoting Battaglia, destruction is the most reassuring form of possession. When they deal with women, villains often interpret the glorification of their force as sexual subjugation and assault. So sometimes their action also show the desire to punish a male superhero by killing or brutalizing his woman, and as she is a possession, is a male possession. This trend affects the comic world with what Gail Simone called women in the refrigerator syndrome. According to Simone, there is a dangerous exploitation of death, rape, and injury of female character in stories starring superheroes, and even for such conflicting worlds, this treatment is to be considered unfairly patriarchal because gender-based violence is often exploited as a plot device to force the male protagonist to grow, to face their fears, to add new reason to their fights, to enhance their moral. So women can sadly be helpless narrative tools to be used to deepen the male superhero story and mission. Simone's provocative illness is inspired by the murder of Alex DeWitt, the girlfriend of Kyle Rayner, Green Lantern. In Green Lantern 44, in 1994, the smart, independent, and combative photojournalist is killed, dismembered, and literally stuffed into a refrigerator by sadistic villain Major Force, with no other reason than to hurt the superhero. Alex is a notable name in a long list of killed and abused girlfriend, wives, and love interests, which also includes Gwen Stacy, Spider-Man's first girlfriend. His archenemy, Green Goblin, kills Stacy in The Amazing Spider-Man 121 in 1973, kidnapping her and throwing her off a bridge. Gwen's murder is a traumatic and painful moment for Peter. Until this point, despite the many tragedies and the many obstacles in his life, Spider-Man has always faced evil with a smile. Now he's broken-hearted and wished for a bloody revenge. Saying goodbye to Gwen is an indelible wound, and the grief forced Peter to mature and to become more adult, transforming a story about adolescent alienation into a generational tragedy. Gwen's death was a pivotal moment in comic history, the end of innocence for the series and for the superhero genre in general, a time when a defeated hero could not save the girl, when fantasy merged uncomfortably with reality, and mortality finally visited the world of comics. So this fictional loss can be linked to the loss of innocence in society as a whole, because superheroes have their limits, as well as the US national power. Gwen becomes the allegory of this innocence, the sacrificial lamb that accidentally fostered the passage between the light-hearted Silver Age and the more conflicting and sociopolitical aware Bronze Age, also reflecting the real tumultuous historical background in which America is facing Vietnam War, Watergate, Atomic Nightmare, and many other sociopolitical contrast. So the most disturbing details of the story arc is that the reason behind Gwen's death were partially misogynist. Gwen is a good, smart, and educated young woman, and the only possible end for her relationship with Peter would have been marriage. But the creator didn't believe that this path would have been right for the superhero characterization, and they wanted new love adventure for Spider-Man. So they decided to kill Gwen off. Since it was not the right time to be a wife, she has to die. And another surprising and upsetting episode of violence against women is the one perpetrated on Barbara Gordon, Batgirl. She is also the daughter of Commissioner Gordon. She's attacked by Joker in Batman the Killing Joke in 1988. Joker wants to prove that all it takes is one bad day to reduce the sanest man alive to lunacy. He shoots Barbara, leaving her paralyzed, and while she's still in pain, undresses her and takes nude pictures of her. It is disturbing that the whole point of what is done to Barbara is to explore how her father, a Batman, would have reacted to it and how they would have felt about it. So she's just a medium. Similarly to what happened to Gwen Stacy, Barbara's suffering and abuses are justified only in the perspective of exalting the moral firmness of the male characters. The sexualized violence against Barbara reminds us that many comics also depict the sensitive issue of sexual abuse and rape, and that several villains or anti-heroes are rapists and harassers. In the Wonder Woman universe, Amazons are raped and enslaved by Hercules and his men. Jessica Jones, in Alias 2428 in 2003, Jessica Jones is mind controlled by Purple Man. She's psychologically tortured for months and abused, forced to have intercourse against her will. Felicia Hardy, Black Cat, is raped by her college boyfriend Ryan and drugged and abused by Garrison Klum, a disturbed and perverse mutant and a drug dealer in Spider-Man Black Cat, The Evil That Men Do. One of the most shocking episodes of violence against women is the attempt rape of Sally Jupiter, Silk Spectre, by Edward Morgan Blake, the comedian, in Watchmen. Silk Spectre and the comedian are teammates. They are both part of the Minutemen, the principal superhero group of the 40s in the Watchmen timeline. As with many other Moore characters, the comedian is not an impeccable superhero. He's presented more as a negative hero or an anti-hero. He's violent, he's rude, he's broken. The scene in which he tries to rape Sally is visually brutal and linguistically misogynist. The comedian beats the woman and justifies his action through victim blaming and rape myths. Since she's wearing a sensual and revealing costume, Sally is asking for sex, and her refuse secretly means that she wants it but is playing hard to get. So for the offender, no means yes. Silk Spectre is saved by a fellow Minuteman who did justice, but neither her helpers is compassionate. After ruthlessly pushing the comedian away, who the justice commands Sally to get up and, for God's sake, cover herself, implying that her bloody stained and forcibly undressed body is shameful. In Watchmen, even Vigilante Rorschach judged comedian's crime, including Sally's attempted rape, as moral lapses, suggesting that one bad deed, no matter how heinous, can't remove one's status as moral agent without taking into account the rights and the feeling of the victim. To make things worse, at times victims have also to deal with the diminishment of their trauma. Besides an agent lonely Silk Spectre that minimized their trauma because it happened decades ago, another example of these tendencies is in Avengers 200 in 1980. To celebrate this important milestone, it was decided that Miss Marvel would have a baby, but they imagine a story arc for these special issues that is absurdly heinous. Carol is abducted, brought to limbo, brainwashed, and impregnated by Marcus Immortus, the unhappy son of Avenger archenemy Immortus. Back on Earth, an oblivious Miss Marvel gives suddenly birth to a baby boy after 3 days pregnancy. The newborn rapidly grows into an adult man and we discover that he is the conscious reincarnation of his rapist father who wanted to escape from limbo, implanting his essence into Miss Marvel. So after causing a catastrophe that threatens to destroy time and place on the planet, Marcus decides to return to his hellish confinement and save the world from his collapse. A confused and still manipulated Miss Marvel accompanies him in the other dimension, talking about the unexpected, strong, and incestuous feeling that she has for her child, father of the child, rapist, Marcus Immortus. So the Avengers say goodbye to Carol, wishing her to live happily ever after, and completely ignoring the evil heavy implication of such an event. So rape, conditioning, and forced pregnancy are not clearly recognized as abuses and presented more as a plot devices to cut the audience's attention. Miss Marvel is traumatized and violated. She has neither control of her body or other feelings and no choice about giving birth. But still, motherhood is presented as something natural, a gift, no matter what the conditions are, and it is implied that maternal love could also overcome violent impregnation and oppressive personal relation. Wasp even congratulates the proud parent of the baby. Carol can only reply that she has been used and she doesn't feel any connection with the newborn, just to strangely change her mind few pages after. These are cruel examples of the cult of masculinity and the purity myth that I'm to limit or to nullify female sexuality and sexual awareness, strengthening a rape culture in which men are expected to be sexually aggressive and women passive. In this way, as Jessica Valenti argues, sex is transformed into an act of persuasion and domination. When woman's sexuality is imagined to be passive or dirty, it also means that man's sexuality is automatically positioned as aggressive and right, no matter what form it takes. So it seems like we are encouraging a culture of violence and sexuality that's detrimental to both men and women. In this vision, feminine bodies are like territories to be invaded, governed, and exploited to prove attacker supremacy against women or the enmity that they symbolize. Aggressors exploit sexual abuses in order to impose oppressive gender roles and to exalt patriarchal dominion on bodies that are perceived as discordant, non-obedient, or threatening. The aim of violence is to hurt, to humiliate, to broke individual. As Felicia Hardy, Black Cat, says to Matt Murdock in Spider-Man Black Cat, The Evil That Men Do, giving an incisive explanation of rape and its reason. I'm talking about someone who forces himself into you against your will. And the whole time, you know he's not doing it because he wants you. He's doing it to hurt you. He's doing it because he wants you to know how powerless you are. He's doing it to take away everything good and positive you ever felt about yourself. He's doing it to humiliate you. He's doing it to break you. As analyzed in these few examples, violence has several meanings and implications. It can be physical or psychological or both. It can hurt people for sociopolitical reason or for disturbed fantasy of supremacy and sexual control. It can materialize the worst nightmare of patriarchy and misogyny. It can be influenced but never justified by culture, tradition, and economy. The treatment of female characters in comics reflects the treatment of underrepresented, hypersexualized, diminished, discriminated, or violated women in real life. Whether they are corporeal or fictional, survivors of violence have to deal with difficult traumas and problems, including behavioral disorders, relationships and sexual difficulties, depression, anxiety, insomnia, and anger attack. They have to learn how to endure and not give up. So despite the cliché, the objectification, and the revealing costume, this is exactly what female superheroes shows us at the end of the day, how to endure and not to give up. They embody resistance and resiliency. The Amazons ultimately defeat Hercules and his warrior, and in so doing, they smash the toxic conception that interprets gender-based violence as a behavior that supports and validates male power. Jessica Jones learned how to fight back purple men. Barbara Gordon is no longer Batgirl, at least not for a long while, but she keeps opposing crime, becoming Oracle, the genre most developed disabled hero. Felicia Hardy doesn't give up on love and trust, also inviting other victims to face trauma, to go to therapy, and to report abuses. She remembers readers that victims are never to blame. Aggressors are always. In a way or another, superwomen who survive violence take control back of their bodies, reaffirm their power and their rights, and raise their voices. Present-day comic industry is extremely different from the past era, but there are still problems in depicting superheroines and female characters. So in order to propose always more inclusive and realistic model of femininity and diversity, publisher, writer, and artist should increase the normalization of the hypersexualized and artificial representation of women, the limitation of the sexist language, and the challenge to gender roles, beauty standards, and racial ethnic prejudice, among others. The less the focus will be on female appearance, the more women will be really empowered, emancipated, and sexually liberated. So giving voice to real women issues, superheroines are an extraordinary medium of education, culture, and promotion of feminist values. Fictional symbols able to fight against patriarchal myth, misogynist action, and sexist discourses in reality. Superheroines can encourage little girls to aspire to the star and not to watch the sky from the tower of a castle. Superheroines can help us teach and foster peace, respect, resistance, inclusion, and equality in a world where women are still and too often silenced, abused, and killed just because of their gender. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Do you have any questions, comments?
Avete ascoltato Fantascientificast, podcast di fantascienza e cronache della galassia, da un'idea di Paolo Bianchi e Omar Serafidi, con il contributo cibernetico del Cylon Prof Massimo De Santo. Potete seguirci ed interagire con noi sul nostro sito fantascientificast.it, su Facebook alla pagina Fantascientificast, su Twitter sul profilo @fantascicast, sul nostro canale Telegram t.me/fantascientificast, sulla nostra community Telegram t.me/fsccommunity. Se siete particolarmente timidi, potete utilizzare la vecchia, cara e affidabile posta elettronica scrivendoci all'indirizzo redazione@fantascientificast.it. Tutte le puntate sono disponibili sul nostro sito, su Apple iTunes, su Spotify e su Podbean all'indirizzo podcast.fantascientificast.it. Se volete, potete lasciarci una valutazione a 5 stelle su Apple iTunes ed offrirci una birra romulana o un gotto esplosivo pangalattico, sostenendoci tramite una donazione PayPal utilizzando l'apposito pulsante sul nostro sito. Fantascientificast è una produzione amatoriale. Non si intende infrangere alcun copyright, i cui diritti appartengono ai rispettivi detentori. L'autorizzazione SIAE 5612I5359. Nessun byte e nessun tribolo sono stati maltrattati durante la produzione di questo podcast. Alexa 4 e l'equipaggio di Fantascientificast vi augurano lunga vita e prosperità e vi danno appuntamento alla prossima puntata lungo la rotta di Kessel.
Settimo simbolo inserito nel computer. Blocco 1 pronto. Blocco 1 posizionato.
Potenza erogata 23%. Così.
Blocco 2 è pronto.
Attivato.
Blocco 2 posizionato.
Siamo al 35%.
Arme rosse, evacuare l'area intorno allo Stargate.
Liberate l'area, torniamo da voi, chiudo le porta.
Andiamo, sbrigatevi.
C'era quello sotto la grande pietra?
Sì,
Mio padre lo trovò nel 1928. È fatto di un minerale che non si trova sulla Terra.
Blocco 5 posizionato.
75%.
Blocco 6 pronto. Blocco 6 posizionato.
Non eravamo mai riusciti ad andare oltre nella sequenza.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.